child voice is a voice held within the boundaries of respect and kindness. To find one's voice, one's true power, does require the containment. Welcome to Gathering Gold, a podcast for highly sensitive souls. I'm Cheryl Paul, a counselor trained in the Jungian depth psychological tradition.
And I'm Victoria Russell, Cheryl's niece and co-host.
The wild has been banished, like the 13th fairy, pushed to the edges of civilization, pushed to the edges of psyche. Wolves and coyotes, bears and bobcats, rage and sexuality and messiness and imperfection have all been banished, relegated to the outskirts. We have been conditioned instead to be so good, to be pure, to be nice, to be tame. But we also see evidence of the wild bursting out from the clearly defined lines. And we have been wondering, Victoria and I, about the difference between an unbridled wild and a civilized wild, the potential danger in the former and the potential vitality in the latter. When the wild shows up, as it often does in dreams and imaginings and creativity, what exactly does it want? And how can we best listen? That's what we will be exploring today. I love this quote by Clarissa Pinkola Estes in her seminal book, Women Who Run with the Wolves: Myths and Stories of the Wild Woman Archetype. We are filled with a longing for the wild. There are few culturally sanctioned antidotes for this yearning. We were taught to feel shame for such a desire. We grew our hair long and used it to hide our feelings. But the shadow of wild woman still lurks behind us during our days and in our nights. No matter where we are, the shadow that trots behind us is definitely four-footed. I think this might be an episode that is more exploratory as we thread through what wildness is. It's so vast. It's almost like talking about God. And it doesn't want to be pinned down and clearly defined. Right? To do so is antithetical to the energy of wildness itself. We can't domesticate a conversation about wildness by talking about it in a linear, here's the answer kind of way. So we talk about it from the side, like the Emily Dickinson poem that you read to us a few months ago. Victoria, maybe you can read it to us now.
Yes. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies. Too bright for our infirm delight, the truth's superb surprise. As lightning to the children eased with explanation kind, the truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind. Or perhaps every woman be blind.
Or perhaps every human be blind.
Yes.
And how interesting that we are recording this during an eclipse.
I know, a total solar eclipse.
Where we can never look at the sun directly, but it's tempting during the eclipse to look at it, and we can't. We have to always always look at the sun with protective gear on our eyes, because the truth must dazzle gradually, right? So it's like that in these big conversations. And I think it helps us, Victoria, to sort of say that and name that at the outset, because when it is a big, juicy topic like this, we so badly want to get it right. We want to kind of nail it down and tie it up with a bow and say, here you go, folks. Here's what wildness is, or here's what civilized wildness is. And it's just too vast. So we're going to come at it from the side, right? If we looked at wildness directly, it would blind us. And if we said it's definitely this one thing, it would stamp the wild right out of it, and it wouldn't be wild anymore. So we know wildness by living it and tasting it and feeling it. And then we forget about it for a while. And then it comes back in a new way with a new level of understanding and different levels of wildness, different layers of wildness. Like even when we were just sitting, you and I, Victoria, for our minute of quiet before we started recording, and I could feel the sort of wild, tingly energy of creativity and that excitement and that nervousness of you don't really know what's going to come through, right? And yes, we could map out an entire episode and write every detail down, but that wouldn't be wild, right? That would be scripted, and that's okay too. And sometimes there's a time and a place for that. And the wildness happens differently in the writing itself. But I think some of the excitement and aliveness of this podcast, of any creative experience, is the not knowing what's going to come through. And we start to taste that sense, we get that sensibility, that flavor of wildness, right? And it's very alive energy. And we also have to trust that there's enough form, that there's enough container, that we've done enough of our back and forth play and writing and researching and conversation around a topic that it's not just a random free-for-all, right? That's sort of the uncontained wild that we'll talk more about, but that in this creative vessel, that there is a vessel that you and I spend time with so that the wild creative energy can come out in a contained way, right? Maybe it would be grounding right now to kind of try to not define wild, but to just some words that we might associate with. What is wild? What are some words that speak to wildness when we think of a wild animal, when we think of a wild part of ourselves, right? Some words that come to mind for me are freedom, right? Undomesticated, uninhibited, a true voice, unencumbered by trauma in a certain way, alive, like fully alive. Another way that I've known wild, and I think a lot of people do, is through our dreams. And the wild has come to me many times over the years in my dreams, but a lot lately, and I'm hearing this a lot in people's dreams that I work with. So I've had a series of dreams about four-footed wild animals recently. This first one is from October 2021. So when I say recently, I mean in the last few years. I have a 3-year-old daughter, dark, curly, wavy hair. I'm taking her to lunch near my childhood house. We're in a crowded restaurant, and I'm trying to find a place for us, as well as a place to put our shopping cart. I find a spot and we eat. Then we're outside near a beautiful creek. Her caregiver, who has been taking care of her, says that while she was under her watch, she lost track of her for a while. But then she found her. The three of us are together now, me, the caregiver, and my daughter. But within moments, we realize that the girl is gone again. We start searching frantically for her, looking in the river, which is extremely beautiful but has sections that are rushing, other sections that are calm. Big stones and rocks all around, silver stones. We're calling for her. Her name is Michael, and we call Michael, Michael, over and over again. She's gone, and I'm terrified that she has drowned in the water. A search party comes to help us, a group of men. Everybody is calling for her, Michael, but nothing. I'm 9 months pregnant, and that's the only thing that makes this bearable. If I lose my daughter, I will have a new baby. Then the men call to me. They're standing at the top of a staircase looking out at the river. They tell me they have some news, and I walk over preparing myself to hear that she's dead. But they say, look. And I look out at the edge of the river to see a line of wild animals. And at the left, sitting down facing me, is Michael. Except now she's a small, beautiful white wolf. She didn't get lost. She left because she had to be free. She had to be in the wild. There was nothing we could have done to stop her. She's with her tribe now, wild animals of the river.
Such a juicy dream.
Yes.
What was it like waking up from that dream? Do you remember?
There are certain dreams I have that seem like, oh, I don't really need to write that down kind of dream. And then there are other dreams that must be written down, even if it's 3 a.m. I must write this down in as much detail as possible. And this was for sure one of those dreams of knowing this is important. No, this is important. And I was doing a lot of really deep inner work at that time, trauma work. And I knew that the dream was connected to that, that work, and that there was, it was about reclaiming a lost part, but also integrating a lost part of recognizing that this young 3-year-old part of me was not lost. I thought she was dead, but not lost. She needed to be in the wild. She needed to be in, there was no stopping her. She needed to be in the wild. I did a lot of journaling and active imagination and meditating, really working with this figure of the white wolf. I found a little white wolf figurine that I think had been part of my kids' Lego set or something, but I found it. It sort of appeared to me, like it just showed up. And so I put it on my bathroom counter and became very curious about this white wolf. And the white wolf, since that time, has become part of my, you know, tribe of wild animals that show up in my dreams and show up as, to me, I interpret as allies, as figures of protection and reclaiming of lost parts, and helping me to face whatever fears show up in life, sometimes a specific fear that I might be working with, and that I bring in these wild animals.
It was interesting to hear you talk about integrating that part of yourself, that 3-year-old part, the part that experienced trauma. Mm-hmm. When it comes to wildness, I'm really interested in integration. Like, how does the wild integrate with the other parts of us? And it's something that I've been thinking about for like 10 years now, since my early 20s, when I first got a little wild, I would say, or maybe not first. Probably when we're really young, we are naturally a little bit wild, and then we get tamed And then maybe we have some sort of rebellious period in our teens or 20s. And then maybe we try to put a cork in that, push it down. Because I think the wild can be frightening if we feel like, oh, the wild got control of me in a way where I felt out of control and it started to feel destructive. I think a lot of people have experience with that at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been really interesting to me to think about what does it mean to grow up, to become an adult, to tap into your wise self, your loving adult self, as you talk about, and your wild self, not either or. And this topic came up at our recent Gathering Gold Patreon meetup. Someone asked about addressing this topic of reclaiming our wildness. And we both kind of lit up because I think we are both interested in it, but we wanted to talk about it from that perspective of what does it mean to integrate? Like, what does this actually look like in our lives?
I love what you're saying here about, this is the theme of this episode, of an integrated wild or a contained wild, not just the unleashing, right? And so when you started to taste that, I'm going a little wild in my early 20s, and then it can feel scary. What comes to mind is, like Clarissa Pinkola Estes, we have this longing for the wild, right? And it can get unleashed in unhealthy ways when there aren't boundaries and containment around it. And sometimes the going wild, we think of drinking, partying, alcohol, that's when we sometimes give ourselves permission to be wild, to unleash. But if it's not in a containment, right, it can really get out of control. And in the extreme, in the form of addiction, right, that is an out of control wild. And then even with trauma, talking about this dream image and the work that I was doing at that time, that trauma unbound, unhealed, unaddressed is an out of control feeling.
Yeah.
Right. And so the dream image of a trauma part transforming into a white wolf going into the wild with her tribe, right? It's no longer, she didn't die. And by the way, I'm also 9 months pregnant in the dream. And so there's a new life that's going to come. And within the containment of doing the trauma work, this transformation can happen where I can still call on the wild. She's not gone. She's there. And welcome in a new life, right? And so I think with every form of wild, whether it's creativity, anger and rage, sexuality, right? There's an unleashed, uncontained aspect that can be scary and that I think is sometimes glorified in our culture right now. Like, just say whatever you want, whenever you want to. And I understand the pendulum sometimes needs to swing because we've been, as I said in the beginning, so good and so contained and so kind and so puritanical that there's a rebellion against that. But we can't stay there. That doesn't serve us, right, to stay there. And Clarissa Pinkola Estes, in her section about anger and rage, not even anger, she calls it rage.
Yeah.
Talks about someone she knew who had uncontained rage and just it got a very creative person and it got poured into every script she wrote and every performance piece and how everyone's bad and people are bad. And so it was this projection of her wild rage, but not in a refined way. Right? It was uncontained. It was unfiltered. And so I think what's been interesting for you and I, Victoria, is to watch this sort of unfiltered experience that's being played out in social media a lot and say, I guess we could call that wild, but that's not really the wild that we're interested in, right?
Yeah, and even to think back on, I think when we are younger and we don't have as much experience and we don't have as many regulation tools and as much self-awareness and all of that, as much wisdom, we can see like how you yourself can get burned. You can accidentally burn other people in a way that you're just like, I don't want to do that. But we don't want to banish and call bad any of those wild parts. We just want to learn what it means to integrate them. And I think of like being in contact with the natural world as such an amazing way of being in contact with our wild, I think. Mm-hmm. And when we think of those animals, it's like, you know, a mother bear, a mother black bear is not going to go attacking every human that walks by, right? Mm-hmm. But if a person gets in between her and her cubs or is threatening her and her cubs, like that's when you're going to see the aggression come out. Yes. It's not, if a bear is aggressive unprovoked, then it's like a sign that something's wrong, like something's off with that bear, right? Mm-hmm. So even out in the wild, it's not that wild animals are constantly lashing out and constantly being aggressive, right? If so, there's an issue there. And I think with humans as well, it's like gaining that wisdom and discernment of how to use these parts.
Yes, wisdom and discernment.
And I think even in my early 20s when I, you know, had my version of feeling kind of wild, there were beautiful parts too amidst all the messy parts of it. And some of the beauty was in this fire that I had to really grow and take care of myself and like stand on my own two feet and find my strength, you know, and pushing myself to do things out of my comfort zone. And I remember like going to a concert in New York City, meeting up with a friend when I was 22, 23. And then she had to go to Grand Central Station to go back to Connecticut. And I went to Penn Station to come back to New Jersey. And I was standing in the concourse waiting for my train. And we had just had such a fun time at this concert, dancing, and we like met the band, and you know, and I'm standing in the concourse afterwards, and there were all these couples standing together, like leaning on each other and cuddling, waiting for the train home. And I was like, I'm so happy to just be standing here alone right now. Like I just had this energy of aliveness and this like, in this moment, I feel so grounded and good to just be myself standing here in this city, in this, you know, in this night. And that was a new feeling for me. So there's beauty amidst all of it.
So beautiful. And I'm curious, fast forward to now, almost 10 years later, with a long-term partner, in a graduate program, having worked for all those years in your 20s, with your own apartment, where do you feel wildness, wild energy now?
It feels like a tide, like it can ebb and flow so much. And I think I really feel it when I am hiking or I go to the rock climbing gym and I really tap into that sense of like, this is my body, this is my breath, and no one can take these steps for me, even if I am with someone else. Like, I guess someone could carry me up and down the mountain, I guess, theoretically. But I think it's in those moments when I'm out in nature. Just today, I went for a nice walk at one of my favorite spots and sat there in the woods by a pond and just breathed and listened. And that's when I feel it, really. And when I'm in connection to creativity, like you said, in my early 20s, that's when I really started writing poetry, and I would share at open mics and which looking back on, I'm like, you know, that took courage. And it's been a real process, kind of as you mentioned, doing this podcast, like showing up to recordings and just trusting what will be here is what will be, and it will be enough. And I can trust, like you said, that we have prepared and that something will come through. And if I am present, it will be enough. And that might not sound very wild, but it is a form, I think, of being in touch with like that wild woman, I guess, who is trusting of herself and of what needs to unfold.
Absolutely. And I think in Clarissa Pinkola Estes' tome, which is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages, if we could distill it down to some of the essence without domesticating wildness too much, it is that sense of being in touch with one's deepest self, like when you're sitting in nature and breathing and at your favorite pond, like when you were standing there in your early 20s, right? Like when you show up, we show up for the podcast, that there's sort of an underneath place, an intuitive place, a creative place that it's so easy to lose touch with in our very loud, fast, domesticated, civilized world. But to name those times when it comes through, right? It's not only when we're out partying and drinking, or even more obvious ways like dance. You know, for me is a very real way, very immediate, accessible way to feel in touch with that freer energy, right? Where I'm just free. But we can feel it sitting on a stone near a pond in nature, right? Which doesn't sound wild, except for the nature part necessarily, but it speaks to that underneath place.
There's many shades, there's many hues, right, to wild. Like, yes, there is the violet shade of unrestrained expression, but then there's like the subtler, you know, lilac shade of being at peace, actually. And I will say another thing that came to my mind was when I am able to, I know you mentioned voice as an important part of wildness, and we'll talk about that more, but when I am able to give voice to something I believe, and I can say it out loud, something that, you know, years of experience have given me some perspective on, and when I can share that out loud, I feel that connection too. Like I was speaking with some other counseling students in my program recently, and we were just talking about going into our internships soon, and some people were saying that they're really going to just keep their heads down and do whatever is asked of them no matter what and just stick it out wherever they go. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to martyr myself. I'm going to work hard. I have no problem working hard and believing in an organization's mission and serving it. But if I end up in a place that's, you know, really unhealthy, I'm not going to abandon myself there. And that felt like a moment of being in touch with that wild woman who's like, I've been around the block a little bit. I worked for 10 years already, and I know now where that goes.
Amen to that, Victoria. That is a very clear moment of wild woman showing up to say, I will not martyr myself. I will work hard. I will serve the company. I will not martyr myself. That is wild woman.
Yeah. Can we hear your second wild dream? I would love to hear it.
This is a more recent dream from February 2024 that I shared with our Patreon community in one of our monthly visualizations, teachings that I send out to the community. and I will share it here. I'm on a path at night, walking back from a parking lot. I had gone there to look for something in the back of someone's car, but I couldn't open the back. It was locked. I hear scrabbling, something coming towards me. I make a lot of noise to deter it, but it only alerts it to where I am. I realize too late that you only make noise to deter a bear. Not all wild creatures. A huge wolf is charging toward me. It lunges and bites the left side of my neck. I know I'm going to die. And then I wrote, I was marked, claimed by wolf. It bit me on the left side of my neck, claimed by the wild. Some part of me will die. For the wild to be born. What is wild in me longing to be reborn? My song, my unpolished song, my song that doesn't have to be good or beautiful and is linked to my voice. The next morning I picked up Women Who Run With the Wolves. I'm reading it through new eyes. I'm thinking about my voice, my song, what happened to my song, my wild, the claiming of my true power, but also the literal song. The pain of shutting down after the sixth grade show with Jessica, how much I loved singing all throughout elementary school. A couple of quotes from the book. She lives in the place where language is made. She lives on poetry and percussion and singing. She lives on quarter notes and grace notes, and in cantata, in a sestina, and in the blues. And another quote, this is our meditation practice. Calling back the dead and dismembered aspects of ourselves, calling back the dead and dismembered aspects of life itself. So for me, and I share a lot more of this in the audio collection that we'll be releasing sometime this year. This feels connected to midlife, to claiming the true song of this next stage, to never, ever going silent, to say, this is who I am, no matter circumstances, not to fall prey to the overly civilized way, the nice girl way, the academic way, the way that keeps us coloring inside the lines. I think this idea that we're exploring, Victoria, of, you know, a true wild voice is a voice held within the boundaries of civility, of respect and kindness, right? That to find one's voice, one's true power, does require, as we keep saying, the containment, right? That yes, we want to speak up. Yes, we don't want to go silent, but how do we speak up, right? How do we express our true voice still with consideration, with skill, with kindness, with filter? And that does require skill, right? It's easy in one way to stay silent and to stay in the good girl martyr. And it's easy in a different way to be all out there, unleashed, uncontained. I'm going to say whatever I want, whenever I want to anybody. And then the middle path of to be in our true power with maturity.
Yeah, it's such a powerful dream that kind of brought all of those themes to you, especially the bite on your throat, right? Mm-hmm. Where your voice comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, like, what part of you had to die for that voice to come out?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's what I want to say, but I don't know if it's really the full picture, is self-doubt is a big piece. Reclaiming parts of my story, which includes trauma pieces that I hadn't been aware of fully. Like, I knew they were there, but not as fully as I do now. Trusting my body. And I think trauma work at its best is a process of re-inhabiting the body, because we tend to dissociate in trauma. We tend to leave. And we stop trusting our experience. And so to know what I know, to trust what I know, which people might look at me and say, but you've been doing that for a long time. And yes, in my work, I've had very little self-doubt. This has come out more interpersonally in my marriage, within myself. Places where it has been easy for me to second guess, to collude with somebody else's version of me. Doing so much work around mother wound and father wound. I mean, that work I've been doing for decades and decades, but as I often say, it's layers and spirals. And so layering into the next spiral of that when those parts die, I don't even want to say die, but just get integrated,
mm-hmm. you know,
that the parts, when I say those parts, I mean those parts of self-doubt, of amnesia, of disconnect from the body. Mm-hmm. And that gets reclaimed, right? That the white wolf is now here with me in her rightful place, with her tribe of wild animals on the edge of the river with the silver stones, right? That there's some magic there too. That a fuller voice, right? A truer power is then available to us.
It's like a composting. The death is like a composting, right? It's not gone. Those parts, the self-doubt, maybe perfectionism, like it's not like, oh, it's dead and gone, right? Mm-hmm. It's Mm-mm. not that simple, actually. But it's like a composting.
It is.
That's how I'm thinking of it.
Yes. It is a composting. Like the way I talk about anxiety or panic or fear, we're not in the business of banishing any of it, right? We're about welcoming it all in to see what the messages are and how we can then integrate and use the energy sometimes of shame also, right? to transform, to walk through a pathway. The pathways show up a lot in my dreams. Right? I'm on a pathway. And so these pathways of from one state to another state, from self-doubt to self-trust, from the good girl, the good child to the wild, but an integrated wild.
Yeah. I'm thinking about what my time working for a philanthropic organization for almost 10 years and how we did a lot of different, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion training and team building. And a lot of it had to do with communication, obviously, because being a team is all about communication and how we use our voices. And we would just talk a lot about there are so many different ways that people from different cultures use their voice and how important it is to honor that. And how important it is to find ways to be honest and be effective at the same time. And I think about all of that a lot. You know, there's a lot of conversation around tone policing. In particular, there will be conversation about white women tone policing women of color if they express themselves with anger or, you know. And I'm just thinking about that whole aspect of it too, that as women, we are taught to be so, so, so gentle in how we communicate, all of the emojis, all of the exclamation points, all of the giggling, you know,
yes.
And that sometimes it is uncomfortable to just directly say what we are thinking or feeling, what is true. I remember, you know, one of my coworkers, she's such a passionate woman, and there was a man at work who spoke to me honestly really inappropriately. Mm. And she was just like, "Do not talk to her like that." Mm. You know? And I just froze, right? Mm. Because it was so hard for me to say, "Please don't talk to me like that." Like that was not right. You know,
yes.
I was searching for the nice way to do it. And she, you know, sometimes her very direct and passionate manner, it meant that she wasn't always the most careful with her words. And sometimes she apologized to people, or she said, "Let me try that again," or you know, or we just respected, like, she is a truth teller in this organization. And I just really learned a lot from working with her and the way that she would use her voice for me too.
Mm.
Because one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot with the wild woman archetype, and if a lot of different things that I'm reading right now around Celtic mythology and things like that, is this idea of women in mythology, like Celtic mythology, being like protectors and guardians of the land.
Mm.
And how we see, like I mentioned, like the mother bear protective instinct. And so often I think that can get twisted into women being these like selfless caregivers who completely are depleted. But there's actually such strength in being a protector, a guardian, again, with that discernment of how to do that in a way that isn't draining your own life force, but is actually giving you life. I want to be one of the protectors.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a lot of thoughts.
Yes. All so good. To be a protector is to be fierce.
Right.
And I think ferocity is a quality of wildness. It's to be fierce.
Yes.
Right. And we can see that in the wild, like you're saying. Wild animals aren't always fierce, or we don't always see it. But and there's so much I want to say based on what you just said. But first, it calls to mind one of my recent dreams that I had the night after we had the last Patreon gathering. I won't share the whole dream, but the last image was of a lioness coming toward me, and my instinctual dream self was running like hell, right, to get away. But my awake self then turned to face the lioness to do an act of imagination with her. And as soon as I did, she nuzzled in. Right?
Mm.
She was here as an ally, as a protector. Mm. to give strength, right? To be fierce, to be a guardian. And so she joined my group of the white wolf and the gazelle that was also in the dream with the lion, and now the lioness. And I have many dreams about bears and wolves, right? And so they're all here now in a very alive way. In fact, I had Asher help me in Photoshop make a piece of paper. I'll share it with you, Victoria, of the four main animal allies that feel very present for me right now. But what you're saying about a voice and a true voice and a fierce voice, and she talks about this in Women Who Run with the Wolves, and you know, I'm sure we've talked about this too, that there is a place for righteous anger, right? There is a place to be firm and fierce and to say, do not talk to her like that.
Yeah.
That is not okay. When there's a boundary crossing, that's when we rise up, and we don't have to be skillful and gentle and tender the way that we might want to try to be with our partner or our child or a friend, right? Then we're trying to channel the maybe we're feeling rage or really strong irritation, and that's not the best moment to express it. And so we hold it, and we then hopefully transmute it into a more sensitive expression, not to be nice and kind and good girl, but because it's the most effective way to communicate,
right? Yeah,
with somebody in those moments. But to have access, it's like you talked about the frozen. Well, that's I think most women have that response in the moment. We often freeze and we lose our voice. Someone speaks to us in a way that's inappropriate or does something and we freeze. And I think a big part of reclaiming, which we talked about in the sexual sovereignty episode, of reclaiming the voice is to have access in those moments. I am still working on that myself. Right? When I'm out in the wild, in the world, and somebody, most often a male somebody, crosses a boundary in some way, and I often don't have access to my voice in the moment, right? I'm thinking about, and I'm sure it's okay to share this because she shared it in her stories. My friend Sylvia on Instagram just recently shared in her stories this great example of having a voice and a boundary. She was at the gym and this older man was using the weights and he was doing a lot of sets. And she said, hey, do you mind if I use the weights in between the sets? She wanted to use those same weights. And he said, oh, sure. And I think he was probably above 75, like someone you might think of like, oh, it's a grandpa, like, nice. I've had this experience myself at the gym with men in that age range. And he said, do you mind if I watch?
Ooh.
Ooh. Ugh.
Ooh.
And she said, yes, I mind.
Mm.
Mm. So good.
Yep.
So clear. Yep. Such immediate access. No taking care of him.
No.
She didn't have to bite his head off and be like, you disgusting, dirty old man. You know, that's wild woman. That is empowered, clear, fierce, without being out of control, voice, setting a very clear boundary. Yes, I mind. The subtext is, you effing disgusting. But what came out is refined, skillful, firm.
Mm-hmm.
I love that so much.
And I think that is such a perfect example of when we say wild and our minds go to, like, if we associate wild with a stage of life, it's often the teens and the 20s because, oh, that's when you go to parties and you hook up with people. And I mean, I'm not saying that's what everyone does, but it's like, that's the conception of like, that's the time when you're wild, unrestrained. But the true like home in yourself wild, like the true second growth forest being reborn on what was cut down, I think is more of a, I mean, I'm not quite there yet, but I think it's something that a lot of people talk about coming more in midlife and beyond as you start to really cut away at the trappings of things that keep you disconnected from what you really want, what you really feel is right. And that is just such a perfect example. I mean, there could be a 21-year-old girl who would have the, you know, the strength to say that to him. Yes, I mind. Of course, but there's something just so solid and rooted about that.
Yes. Yes. That I think in general comes with time and age, right? It doesn't mean some people don't have access to this. They absolutely do in their teens or 20s. I didn't. I absolutely didn't. And like I said, I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
In situations, you know, similar situations that she encountered. But there are other situations where, you know, you can feel, I can feel when I am like all like the pieces of the inner self and that place of the lioness and the wolves is locked in. And there's a clarity, right? There's an unapologetic clarity that's not mean. It's just clear. This is what I know. This is who I am. And I know what I know.
Yeah, and even when we still have the parts of ourselves that have doubt or have messiness, I think of a movie from, I don't know, 15 years ago or something at this point called Doubt, based on a play. And Meryl Streep plays a nun. And it's kind of a dark movie, but she's an older nun and Amy Adams plays a young nun. And they're at this Catholic school. And the older nun has this suspicion that one of the priests is abusing one of the boys at the school, a young black boy at the school. And the priest is this older white guy. And she goes into protector mode and she gets, well, spoiler alert, she gets the priest out of there. But the end of the movie, she says, I have such doubts. And it's like the whole time she has just seemed like laser, like this woman has no doubt in her mind. And you don't even really know, is she talking about doubts about whether God exists or doubts about whether she was right about the priest? You don't know. But it's like such a powerful, I've only seen the film once, like 15 years ago. And I still remember Meryl Streep's just sitting there going, I have such doubt. And there's something so powerful to me about that, that you can be so many things at once, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Being fierce and clear and setting boundaries and going after what's right doesn't mean you don't have doubt.
Yeah.
You can do all that and still have doubt.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast recently. It's called the Everything Belongs podcast from the Center for Action and Contemplation, which is where Richard Rohr lives and works. And in this podcast, the hosts interview Richard Rohr, who's one of my like favorite spiritual teachers, as we've talked about before, a Franciscan. And he said something about wildness that I felt like fit so perfectly with some of the themes you have been talking about recently with spring, Cheryl. Do you mind if I bring that in here?
Please, now? Please. Yeah.
This just really speaks to what we're saying kind of about boundaries. Richard Rohr said, without boundaries, the ego is out of control because it thinks everything is new land for me to discover and own and use. You see the patterns in the wildness of nature, and you have the best of both worlds. You're sitting alone in the forest, and you still see order. You still see ecosystems at work. You still see bees pollinating flowers, the co-relationship of things. That's what makes it so beautiful that you love the wild and you love the patterns inside of the wild too. Mm-hmm. They're both true.
Yes.
This is what you were talking about, Cheryl, in the spring equinox episode about the fractal nature of the universe and how you can see a meadow of wildflowers and it looks so wild. But at the same time, every flower has these fractal petal patterns, and there's an order to the way that the sun rises and sets and the stages of the moon and the seasons of the year. And there's an order and a wildness both. And one of the hosts of the podcast, his name is Mike Petro, he said to Richard Rohr in this episode, there's a Jungian named Eugene Pascal, and in one of his books, he says that the reason that we have law and dharma that we study early on is because we have to learn to use the powers of the soul safely. And that's what I think about around the wild. It's like finding the containers that allow us to use the powers of the wild safely. And I was thinking of this imagery of, you know, my partner is a wildland firefighter, and there's so much with wildfire. Like, wildfire is a good thing for the ecosystem. It's necessary. If you suppress wildfire too much, which we have done in the US, like newer studies show that there was probably too much suppression done, which creates the potential for worse fires in the future. If you suppress too much, that's not good, but there are ways to try to control the fire so that it doesn't decimate entire communities or entire species. So I have this image of just like we are the forest and the fire and the firefighter all at once, right? And that there is a symbiotic relationship to be found in all of that.
Yes. Beautiful.
Like you said, it's such a rich, deep, vast, expansive topic yet again. And I feel like I was so nervous going into this recording, just thinking, oh, there's so much to say about this. But this is just one offering. Hopefully we can return to this topic.
Yes, there are many offshoots that we could take. Like we could have a whole episode about anger and rage, which people have requested in the past. That would be very interesting to explore, but I think we've touched on some really good key points, and hopefully it'll give people places to meditate on and explore in their own wild wanderings.
Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you to Jarrett Farkas for the use of our beautiful new theme music. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe or follow, leave us a review, share it with a friend, and consider joining our Patreon, where we share regular bonus content and also host virtual meetups. Visit patreon.com/gatheringgold to learn more.